Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Record, formerly the Paxton Record, for Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. We begin our reading today with an article on the front page, headlined, Community Effort. Five-year playground improvement project culminates with completion of second phase at City's North Park. Gibson City. Just a few years ago, the playground at Gibson City's North Park lacked variety. There was a merry-go-round, some old swings, and a few rocking horses, and a cabin-like structure. It wasn't easily accessible for handicapped children either. The playground equipment was surrounded by pea gravel, making it difficult to move a wheelchair, a stroller, or anything with wheels through. Then came an aggressive fundraising campaign by the Gibson City Rotary Club, which ended up raising more than $200,000 in donations toward improving the playground over a five-year span to give more appeal and make it more inclusive and safer for children of all physical abilities. Sunday marked the culmination of those efforts as the club held an open house in the afternoon at the park to show off the new playground to the community. A few weeks earlier, the club installed the last of the new playground pieces that have given the park on the city's north side a new look and feel, literally. Every time you drive by the park and see all those kids playing on the new playground, it's pretty impressive just to know that so many kids in the community have gotten to enjoy this equipment, said Jana Friday, the Rotary Club's president. The number of kids who came up here to play with their parents has grown exponentially, added Rotarian Tom Davis. I mean, any time you come up here now, there's kids up here playing and having a good time. The first phase of the playground improvement project was completed 3 years ago, involving the replacement of several old playground structures on the playground's east side and the installation of a soft, rubber-like surface on the playground around the equipment. That cost more than $100,000. The second phase was completed in recent weeks, costing about the same amount as the first. It involved installing the new equipment on the playground's west side, including a slide, a couple of teeter horses, and some new swings and gliders, as well as the same soft surface material that had been used previously on the east side. Also installed was a concrete pavement in an area to the southwest of the playground, where picnic tables and awning were also added to give parents and grandparents a relaxing place to sit. Susie Tongate, a former president of the Rotary Club, who now serves as its fundraising chairman, said that when the first phase of the playground project was completed in September 2015, it was deemed such a success that the club immediately decided to upgrade the remaining portion of the playground. The second phase is not a replication of the first. The play pieces in the second phase are geared toward kids ages 5 to 12, while the first phase are geared towards children age 2 to 5, Davis said. We wanted to have a fairly wide variety of things they could play on. It's brought a lot of traffic to the city and a lot of recognition in the park area, Tongate added. Tongate said the idea to improve the playground was suggested by Rotarian James Doc Meyer, whose daughter had special needs. When we were looking for a project to do in Gibson City, it came to our attention that this park was not very inclusive of kids in need, Tongate said. The improved playground reaches out to kids of physical disabilities, and some of the equipment here is for kids on the autism spectrum, too. The playground we had before, it was like that gravel over there, Rotarian Larry Littlefield, pointing to a play structure with pea gravel around it located to the north of the improved playground. You couldn't run a bicycle, a wheelchair, a baby carriage, or anything around it. But here, you can bring a wheeled device right up to the surface and all the kids can play on the equipment. This is just so much easier and safer. You can walk right into it. All of the new playground equipment was purchased from New Toys. Rotarians Gene and Sue Everett were a huge part of this project, Tongate said. Gene was the main organizer and the contact who worked with New Toys and the overall organization of the entire project. The Rotary Club is now exploring options for its next project, Tongate said. Ideas being considered are the resurfacing of the basketball court at the North Park, which Tongate says gets a lot of use, and the addition of wheelchair-accessible tables at the park. As far as the community, there's always something you can add to, Davis said. Rotarians praised the help of workers from the city in getting the new playground built. They also said they appreciated all of the donations from individuals, organizations, and businesses in the community, with Gibson Area Hospital highlighted as one of the biggest donors to the project. We just appreciate the community's support and invite them to continue to use it and make good use of it, Tongate said. The Rotary Club continues to accept donations as it continues to research options for additional projects. Donations may be sent to Gibson City Rotary Club, P.O. Box 103, Gibson City, Illinois, 60936. Now from the Paxton City Council. Frustrations mounting over long-delayed sale of Paxton's airport. Paxton. Frustration has been mounting among city officials in recent months over the length of time it has taken the city to sell its airport. Since the City Council agreed in principle to sell the facility to a private party in February 2017, aldermen have waited patiently for the news that the deal has been finalized. However, that news has not yet come from the city's tax increment financing consultant. Springfield attorney Dan Shuring, who has been working with Mayor Bill Ingold on the property sale. And the patience of the city's elected alderman, it seems, is starting to run out. Mr. Mayor, we were given a deadline, self-imposed by Mr. Shuring, to get the sale completed. Is that correct? He said 45 days at one point, did he not? Alderman Rob Pacey asked Ingold during a July meeting. I think he said 30 days, Ingold responded. My point's been made, Pacey then said. It was back in March when Shuring told the City Council he would like to get the airport sale completed by the end of the city's fiscal year, on May 1st. But May came and went, and in July, Shuring pushed his deadline back to the end of the summer, a statement that led Alderman Bill Wiley to question what specific date that meant. Summer ended with no news, too, and with no resolution expected immediately, an item that had been listed on the agenda of each month's City Council meeting for more than a year, the approval of the sale of the airport, was not listed on either the September or October meeting agendas. Despite the lack of progress, the mayor said Monday that the sale of the airport is still being pursued. The delays in selling the airport, Ingold added, are not the result of issues related to the terms of the transaction, but rather are the result of issues related to the landfill property next to it. The city wants to sell both the airport and the landfill properties, but it does not want to sell one and not the other. The sale of the landfill property, however, has been hung up by red tape as the city has been trying for months to get the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to certify the landfill as having completed its post-closure care period, something that needs to happen before the landfill site can be sold. The landfill has been closed since 1991, yet the IEPA has repeatedly denied the city's application for the site to be certified for completion of post-closure care. Instead, the IEPA has been asking the city to do more monitoring of the site, with the latest request being that the city take groundwater samples from 8 wells there. This happened this summer, and the IEPA has yet to release the city from its obligation to monitor the site. The city is working to sell the landfill to a different person than the airport. The same person is interested in buying the landfill, also wants to buy a small piece of land where a small building used to sit on the south end of the airport. If all goes as planned, the landfill's prospective buyer would negotiate an agreement with the prospective buyer of the airport to use the airport's runway for a crop spraying business. Earlier this year, Shuring expressed concerns that the city could end up being sued by the landfill's prospective buyer if the city were to sell the airport but not the landfill. In April, Ingold said he was working to negotiate the possibility of selling the airport first, given the amount of time it may take to clear the landfill from IEPA restrictions. It appears that scenario is now unlikely. We're not seeing many municipalities' airports being sold, so we want to make sure we're doing it the right way so we don't have something come back and bite us, Ingold said. Ingold said he would like to see both properties to be sold soon to bring them back on the property tax rolls. How soon that will be remains to be seen. Do I like it? No. It is just the way it is? Yeah, a clearly frustrated Ingold said. That's just what's happening when you're dealing with the EPA. We certainly don't want to stub our toe and have them ask us to do more stuff. And an issue we've been following with the Ford County Board. Limits on public comments to see vote next month. It will be next month before the Ford County Board formalizes its public comments policy. On Monday night, the board defeated a resolution that would have limited individual public comments to 3 minutes apiece, with a maximum public period comment of 30 minutes. In November, the board will vote on a resolution that limits individuals to 5 minutes of comments with no cap on the total comment period. Only Chairman Randy Berger of Gibson City voted in favor of the resolution presented to the board Monday night. Several board members said they could live with the 3-minute limit, but not the overall cap. Board member Jason Johnson of rural Paxton said he did not like that public comment could be limited to agenda items only. Board member Tim Nuss of Roberts said he did not think there should be any time or subject limits on public comment. This is the people's podium, Nuss said. We shouldn't restrict them in any way. I hate to recommend that residents drive 45 minutes here to speak and then limit them to just 15 minutes. However, board member Dr. Bernadette Ray of Gibson City offered an alternate view. Ray said residents having to sit through 2.5 hours of unlimited comments could be off-putting as well. Ray noted that there is always an agenda item for written correspondence, but rarely does the board receive written comments from residents. Under the original proposed resolution Monday, if more than 10 members of the public wanted to speak, then they would have to enter a lottery for one of the 10 slots. For much of the past year, people have spoken to the board about an amended wind farm ordinance the board will consider, but rarely has that actual ordinance been listed on the agenda. 10 residents attended Monday's meeting, and 5 spoke to the board about either increasing proposed setbacks for wind turbines or ending wind farm construction in the county altogether. They were each limited to 3 minutes under the board's informal rules. Marianne Harris of Marianne's Country Kennels told the board she has been in business for 40 years. Harris said her kennel building lies in the middle portion of her property, some distance from her home. Proposed setbacks would be measured from the primary structure of a property, her home. But Harris said the turbines too close to what she called the doghouse, stressing the dogs and perhaps sickening them. Harris said such issues could lead her customers to taking their business elsewhere and leaving her 9 employees out of a job. Harris urged the board to make setbacks from the property line and not the primary structure. Patty Meunier brought and set up a scale model that included a turbine size like the ones built in the county already, along with a proposed 650-foot tall turbine and a house. Meunier marked out the recommended evacuation zone for current turbines, but noted there is no such recommended zone for the taller towers proposed. Meunier included a model of the St. Louis Arch demonstrating the 650-foot tower would be taller than that. Karen Wright asked the board to refigure, accusing the wind farm companies of sneaking in and the board not keeping the public in the know. Money isn't everything, Wright said. Greg Phillips told the board he hoped it would listen to the Ford County taxpayers and not outsiders. Emily Latz told the board that her husband, a retired Champaign fireman, suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. They live in Garber, and Latz told the board the shadow flicker from the turbines could be problematic for her husband. One resident said after the meeting that she is in favor of wind power but did not speak up. She said she was taking notes for her own use. No representatives of wind farm developers attended the meeting. Berger told the board he will want at least 2 full weeks after the Zoning Board of Appeals takes any action on the proposed changes to the wind farm ordinance for county board members to review the Zoning Board's decision and all public testimony. Berger said the board will then likely hold a special meeting to vote on the changes. The next Zoning Board of Appeals meeting is set for 7 p.m., Thursday, October 25th, at the courthouse in Paxton, and the Zoning Board may meet again after that. Also Monday, Finance Budget Committee Chairman Chase McCall of Gibson City said a proposed budget for the next fiscal year has been prepared and is available in the county clerk's office for a review. McCall said he projects a $6,000 deficit, which he said makes the budget practically balanced. A year ago, McCall projected a $250,000 deficit. That has not materialized, and McCall said he foresees a cash carryover as of December 1st. McCall said the deficit had been eliminated through responsible spending by department heads, a dramatic increase in jail boarding income, especially increased use by the U.S. Marshals Service, and the shortened period between the due dates for property taxes this year that had many residents opting to pay their entire bill at the first due date. And from Gibson City, Falcons-themed water tower in running for Tank of the Year. Gibson City. Gibson City's newly repainted water tower and tank is in the running in the 13th annual Tank of the Year contest, sponsored by the Nemec Company Incorporated, a provider of protective coatings for water towers. Gibson City's water tower features the Gibson City Melvin Sibley High School Falcons logo. Paint produced by Nemec Company Incorporated was used in painting it. Photos of all the water tanks nominated for the contest, including Gibson City's, are posted at www.tankoftheyear.com, where visitors can vote for their favorite tank. Only one vote is allowed per person, but voters will be able to view the front runners at any time when they revisit the site or track and share contest results using hashtag Tank of the Year. Online voting for the contest will close at 5 p.m. Friday, October 19th. After online voting has ended, the water tank receiving the most votes will be named the People's Choice winner and receive an automatic bid as a finalist for the 2018 Tank of the Year title. The People's Choice winner and the 11 other finalists selected by a committee will be announced on October 22nd. The 2018 Tank of the Year will be then announced on October 26th. All finalists and nominees will appear in Nemec's 2019 water tank calendar, beginning with the Tank of the Year winner in January. Last year's winning entry was a water tower in Destin, Florida, featuring a 500,000-gallon water-legged water tank that depicted a beach scene by muralist Eric Henn. The artwork shows two colorful beach chairs in the white sand, a strand of sea oats bending in the breezes, and a fishing boat on the horizon. The design used an exterior coating system from Nemec. One of Paxton's newly repainted water towers was named as a finalist last year and was featured in the 2018 calendar. Approximately 270 water tanks were nominated for this year's competition, which recognizes the most impressive coating projects in the water tank industry, according to Doug Hansen, director of the water tank market for Nemec. Since the first Tank of the Year was announced in 2006, more than 2,000 water tanks have been nominated from across the U.S. and Canada. Established in 1921, Nemec Company Incorporated manufactures more than 120 architectural and industrial coating products at facilities in Kansas City, Baltimore, Dallas, and Shanghai. And also from Gibson City, Gibson City Rotary Club selling 2019 calendars. Gibson City. The Gibson City Rotary Club is selling 2019 calendars highlighting local organizations each month. The 8x10-inch colorful calendars are available for a $20 donation to the club and can be purchased by contacting Susie Tongate at 217-784-5672 or SusieTongate at hotmail.com. Featured in the calendars are local organizations such as the Lions Club, the GCMS Boosters Club, Gibson Area Hospital, Youth Soccer Program, and the Gibson City Fire Department. You are sure to recognize people you know from Gibson City on the calendar pages, Tongate said. Each calendar is assigned three unique numbers, giving the owner of each calendar three chances to win a prize valued at $100 through 56 drawings that will be done weekly throughout the year. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Record for Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. Connie L. Blank, Claytonville. Connie L. Blank, 72, of Claytonville, died Wednesday, October 3rd, 2018, at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana. Funeral services were held on Saturday, October 6th, at the Trinity Lutheran Church in Cisna Park, with the Reverend Tim Hahn officiating. Burial followed at St. Paul's Lutheran Cemetery in Woodworth. Memorials may be made to the Scleroderma Foundation. Sharon Lou Fatka, Danforth. Sharon Lou Fatka, 65, of Danforth, mother of Piper City resident, died at 8:44 a.m. Monday, October 8, 2018, at present St. Mary's Hospital in Kankakee. Funeral Mass was held at 10 a.m. Friday, October 12, at the St. John the Baptist Catholic Church in Larab, with the Reverend Douglas Hauber officiating. Burial followed in the St. John Cemetery in Larab. Memorials may be made to St. John the Baptist Catholic Church or to her family. Patsy P. Hawley, and that's spelled H-A-L-L-E-Y. Rankin. Patsy P. Hawley, 79, of Rankin, died Tuesday, October 9, 2018, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 1:30 p.m., Saturday, October 13th, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park. Burial will follow in the Rankin Union Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m., Friday, October 12th, at the Knapp Funeral Home in Cisna Park. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association or to the American Cancer Society. Vicki L. Hastings, Milford. Vicki L. Hastings, 64, of Milford, formerly of Loda, died at 9:14 p.m., Wednesday, October 10, 2018, at OSF St. Joseph Medical Center in Bloomington. Funeral services will be at noon, Monday, October 15th, at the Bear Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Deborah Dormeyer officiating. Burial will be at a later date in Pine Ridge Cemetery in Loda. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon prior to the service at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Illinois and Kankakee County Harbor House, Carl Home Healthcare, or Danville Dialysis Services. Roger Dale Hazelwood, Rantoul. Roger Dale Hazelwood, 62, of Rantoul, formerly of Iowa Falls and Eldora, Iowa, died Tuesday, October 9, 2018, peacefully in his home. A memorial service will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 20th, at Trinity Church in Watseka, with the Reverend Bart Custer officiating. Memorials may be made to his family. Marion E. Cairns, Cullum. Marion E. Cairns, 89, of Cullum, died at 4:55 p.m., Wednesday, October 3, 2018, at her residence in Cullum. Her funeral service was held Monday, October 8th, at St. John's Lutheran Church in Cullum, with the Reverend Mauricio Vieira officiating. Burial followed at St. John's Cemetery in Cullum. Memorials in her name may be left to the Cullum Beckman Memorial Library or St. John's Lutheran Church. Joyce A. Lance, Paxton. Joyce A. Lance, 85, of Paxton, died Tuesday, October 9, 2018, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m., Sunday, October 14th, at the Knapp Miller Funeral Home in Paxton, with the Reverends Roger James and Katie Banning officiating. Burial will follow at the Glen Cemetery in Paxton. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m., Saturday, October 13th, at the Knapp Miller Funeral Home in Paxton. Memorials may be made to the American Diabetes Association or the Paxton Church of Christ. Shirley Nassif, Gilman. Shirley Nassif, 83, of Gilman, died Saturday, October 6, 2018. Funeral services were held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 12th at the Bear Funeral Home in Watseka with the Reverend Gary Menard officiating. Burial followed at the Oak Hill Cemetery in Watseka. Memorials in her name may be made to the family's wishes. Louise Stone, Paxton. Louise Stone, 89, a native of Paxton, died Wednesday, June 13, 2018, at the United Memorial Medical Center in Batavia, New York, surrounded by family. A funeral mass was celebrated at 11 a.m. Friday, October 12th, at St. Mary Catholic Church in Paxton. Per her request, she was cremated, and burial will be at the Glen Cemetery in Paxton, next to her mother and stepfather, Francis and Lauren Fancher. Roy O. Worthington, Rantoul. Roy O. Worthington, Jr., 85, of Rantoul, died at 4:50 a.m. Wednesday, October 3, 2018, at Heartland Healthcare Center in Paxton. Private family services will be scheduled at a later date. Memorials may be made to the American Heart Association. We return to the news with a story entitled, Alderman Raises Questions About Tree Removal Project, Gibson City. Alderman Nelda Jordan questioned her fellow Gibson City Council members Monday night about the city's tree removal project and expenses. Expressing concern before the council approved its bills, Jordan asked why local resident Tom Barrow was paid $100 per hour along with Champaign resident Michael Poor to cut down diseased ash trees in the city, adding that she believed Barrow did not contribute to some recent work. Tom was there a half hour in the morning and 15 minutes in the afternoon, Jordan remarked about a recent tree removal job she witnessed. He didn't take any wood or nothing. Poor hauled all the wood. Alderman Doug Parsons asked what the process was for removing the trees, saying that he and other council members were unaware of the situation. If we're going to make a decision, we need to know what's going on, Parsons said. Mayor Dan Dickey said the city has bid out the tree removal work in the past years, but ended up reverting back to the local option of Barrow. A couple of years ago, we had a low bid, but they didn't finish the job, and we got stuck with the bill, so we got Tom Barrow back, Dickey explained. We've had people come in and bid on this, but they stuck us, and we ended up having to pay for it. Alderman Dennis Pardrick added that the city was referred to Poor through Barrow. Poor is a certified arborist who performs complex tree removal projects in addition to regular tree removal. If it wasn't for Tom Barrow, Michael Poor wouldn't be in this town, Pardrick said. Pardrick justified the hauling fee by the fact that the city does not have a location to place the wood, saying it would cost more to have Barrow haul it locally versus Poor. Parsons announced that the committee meeting concerning tree removal plus parking at Telecare Building will be held at 6 p.m. Tuesday, October 16th at the City Hall. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Record. Just a reminder that this and all our weekly paper readings can be found on our website and on the Ciro app for your smartphone. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.